Today, Miles Brand and I will discuss the congressional inquiry into the tax-exempt status of the NCAA. What's going on here? What's happening?
We received a lengthy letter from the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee in the House of Representatives of Congress asking us a series of questions purported to be related to our tax status. Actually, it's not a tax status issue. We are a not-for-profit association, as are the athletic departments of each of our institutions, which are part of not-for-profit universities and colleges. And we are entirely in compliance with IRS requirements. In fact, part of our answer will be an extended brief by legal experts to that degree. That's not the issue. The issue really is whether Congress will pass a new law making intercollegiate athletics taxable. So it isn't about our status. It's so much about whether there's reason for Congress to pass a new law. And we can project what the chances are of that law taking place, and it hasn't come up as a bill yet in Congress. So these are very preliminary questions generated mostly by the staff of Congressman Thomas's committee, and Congressman Thomas is stepping down at this point. So nonetheless, we're going to take this letter very seriously, and we're going to answer those questions as we should, to provide information not just to the Congress but to anyone else who's interested about these kinds of issues.
To me, though, this gets right to the core of one of our purposes, which is athletics is integral within higher education. Higher education is not taxable, so why would intercollegiate athletics be taxable?
That's exactly my point. I mean, it's like saying the music department is going to be taxable just because they put on concerts and
right.
People come in and they buy tickets for them. Well, it turns out a lot more people buy tickets for an intercollegiate athletic events, frankly not all events, but some events.
Yeah.
And if it's wrong in terms of tax status, it's wrong no matter how big or small it is. It doesn't matter the size. What really counts in terms of tax status is the purpose for which the expenditures are made. And in the case of whether it's the School of Music or the athletic department, it's made for the purposes of educating and training young people. It's made for the purpose of how you can improve the education and educational goals beyond the classroom for these young people, and that's part of the college and university's mission. So we think it's fully in conformity with the mission of the institution, and those who think there's a problem here just because of the size of some Saturday afternoon games miss the point about tax status, which is based upon purpose of expenditures.
Now, you said not all events, but some events. Now, if you look at where our income comes from, we have a pretty large contract from CBS that's from men's basketball and the ability to broadcast that every March and April. Why is it okay for us to take that money off of men's basketball and not have it taxed?
You know, what the NCAA does is it sold the media rights to CBS to broadcast these exciting games. The NCAA National Office redistributes 96% of the revenue that comes from that to the schools and conferences. And what do they do with it in turn? But what they do with it is that they use those monies to support the so-called non-revenue sports. I mean, to the extent that football and basketball are self-sustaining, and they're not on every campus, but to the extent that they are, or in fact are producing excess revenue, then we use that money to create participation opportunities for the mass of students who play college sports. If we were a professional league, if we were a business, which we're not, what we would do is we would reduce the sports on campuses down to the few, one or two, that make money, and we would do nothing else. When you think of the NFL, they're only doing one sport, and they're trying to gain profits for their owners. Major League Baseball is the same. All professional leagues are the same. That's not what happens in colleges and universities. What really happens is that we take all the money that comes in through these sports that attract attention and are visible, whether on a national basis or a local basis, and redistribute it to other sports, other campuses, other divisions, so that we can maximize the number of young women and men who are playing in the games. Otherwise, we couldn't afford to do that.
Yeah, when you get back to it, kids like myself who benefited from a Division III baseball experience, I mean, we didn't have any tickets, and you know, I got to play in the NCAA tournament, probably in large part because of the revenue generated from that contract.
You're absolutely right. That's almost all the revenue we have from that contract. And were you aware when you were a student athlete that the expenses, for example, the championships, which are not cheap, the expenses for the championship are being supported by a men's basketball tournament at a different time of the year.
No, I didn't know where that money was coming from, but I'm thankful for it because I like playing ball.
Absolutely, and I don't think your school could have produced as many opportunities for student athletes, women and men, unless they had this kind of revenue. But it's redistributed to support the education on other campuses as it's involved with intercollegiate athletics. Pro leagues don't do that.
Right.
The profit, they make profits. They don't redistribute it for the purposes of education or the purposes of not-for-profit organizations. What they do is they treat it as a profit. We're not for profit. We distribute it according to our mission, which is to involve people in the educational process.
Say that years down the road, the law changes and that our income is then taxable and the income of athletics departments is taxable. What does the world of college sports look like? Do kids like me stop getting opportunities? I mean, is that what we're really dealing with?
I don't think everyone will stop getting an opportunity, but it will make it much more difficult. The vast, vast majority of collegiate programs are losing money, so there's no net gain to pay on the taxes. But they use, as every other tax-exempt organization does, they use their status to build facilities, for example, or to attract philanthropic gifts. You know, a lot of our athletic departments are in part supported by gifts from alumni and fans, and that would make it, if it's for-profit, it's a very different story in that regard. There are lots of state laws that talk about land use, for example, if you're profit versus not-for-profit. So while it won't make intercollegiate athletics go away, there's no question that the number of young people who can participate in it and the number of sports will diminish considerably. We will be taking away opportunities. Here's one thing that's very important, Josh. In Division One alone, we provide $1.2 billion a year in financial aid.
Wow.
That's a lot. Many, many low-income students are going to school because of the aid provided through athletics. And not all of them, by a long shot, are in basketball and football. They're in all the sports, white and black, Asian, Latin American students, all students who are getting these scholarships of low income, who are low income, would not be able to get them if we didn't have these resources.
They're getting opportunities.
They're getting educational opportunities. And many of them, vast majority, are not in the high-profile sports and are certainly not going to be professional athletes. Did I ever mention to you that 365,000 student athletes, most of whom are not going
pro? Yeah, I may have heard that once or twice.
and how do we support them? We're supporting them with financial aid that's coming from the basketball contract.
All right, well, hard question. If you're a basketball student athlete, Division One, and you're helping to generate all of these funds and all these dollars, you know, what if you don't care about the other student athletes that are getting those opportunities? Are you being exploited a little bit?
I don't think you're being exploited. You're getting every opportunity to play. If let's assume it's a high visibility team that plays in the men's NCAA tournament in Division One. You're getting an opportunity that you might not otherwise have in life in terms of being part of a great team, learning a lot from the coaches. If you're one of a very small handful of special elite athletes, you're getting exposure and coaching that you can't buy and that is helping you in your vocation. The learning that takes place in college, both in basketball and skill development in that regard, but socialization that you gain in college, you can't go out and buy that. So the benefits that are going to the student athletes are particularly the ones that are successful, are very important. But it's silly in my mind to think of all this in terms of a handful of a half a dozen student athletes when we've got thousands, hundreds of thousands who are participating. You've got to look at the bigger picture. What are you getting out of it personally as a student athlete is important, but you're part of a bigger picture.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of student athletes, and they're graduating at rates higher than the regular student body. I think what bothers me a little bit personally is that our student athletes are succeeding in the classroom, and you know this congressional inquiry is basically insinuating that we're not doing our job with regard to the academic mission. And maybe that's just me personally,
no,
but I get a little incensed at it.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm very frustrated about that. You know, that's got to be one of the areas that frustrates me the most, that people keep getting the facts wrong. The research is out there. It's very easy to check and we have all that information on our websites. We continually put it out. And we saw in this letter just misquoting the facts, them making it up. The fact of the matter is that student athletes, on average, do succeed more than the general student body in every demographic area. Now, let me give you an example. You were talking about basketball before. In high-level Division I men's basketball, the student athletes are graduating at 8% higher than the general male African-American. The African-American males who play are graduating 8% higher than,
significant,
than the general African-American male population in those schools. 8% in terms of graduation rate is huge. And, you know, people are criticizing these young men, and actually they're doing very well, all things considered. You know, I just get frustrated, as you do, that people misrepresent the facts, and they think if they keep repeating them, it becomes true.
All right. Well, I agree with you, and I appreciate you being so candid with this issue. Obviously, the AA Zone will keep tabs on it, and you may hear us talk about it again here on Mondays with Miles. Thanks for joining us, and Dr. Brandon and I will see you next week.
You bet.